Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has experienced teams who can craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex. Real wealth requires real solutions. Connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Will you still have to buy a pension annuity after the election? We look at new proposals from the Tories. Should higher earners seeking tax relief turn to venture capital trusts? We explain the rules. And are cash ISAs worth bothering with if you only save tax on 0.1% interest? All this to come in this week's FT Money Show. I'm Matthew Vincent, and I'll be giving you the lowdown on all of these money matters in downloadable form with my colleagues from FT Money, Alice Ross.
Hello.
And Steve Lodge.
Hello.
And our special studio guest, Matthew Woodbridge, Head of Investment Products at Chelsea Financial Services.
Hello.
So let's start with the money news. This week, Shadow Chancellor George Osborne announced that a Conservative government would scrap the rule that makes buying a pension annuity compulsory. Under current laws, savers have to use their pension funds to purchase an annuity by age 75, which will then provide them with an income for the remainder of their life. But annuity values have fallen in recent times, offering savers much less income in retirement, half the level that was available back in 1994. So some advisers say that there's now little justification for forcing savers into an annuity when they could draw income from their funds instead. Alice, who do you think stands to benefit from these proposals, assuming that they see the light of day?
It will be wealthier investors who've built up a large pension pot that are mainly going to benefit from these proposals, because the ones that don't have a big pension are going to buy an annuity anyway. Because actually, if you want to go into what's called income drawdown, where you don't buy an annuity and you leave the pension invested in the stock market, you usually need at least 50 grand, well, more than that even. I mean, about 100 grand, 150 grand in your pension pot to make that worthwhile, to make it not worth the risk. So that's already cut out a large part of the population anyway. So we are talking about the wealthy few here who will stand to benefit from this.
So the Tories could be criticised for looking after the wealthy again. Let's just remind ourselves of how the rules currently work. At retirement, you can choose to buy an annuity, or you can choose to draw income from a pension fund. Then when you reach age 75, you still don't actually have to buy an annuity, do you?
Yes, well, there's this relatively recent thing introduced called ASP, Alternatively Secured Pension, which kicks in at age 75. So if you were in USP, which is another word for income drawdown, so unsecured pension.
This is just basically taking money out of your pension fund and using it to, you know, spend.
Exactly, and meanwhile leaving the pension money invested in the stock market or wherever you want to put it, but you're not giving it to a life insurance company, basically. So if you were in USP at age 74 and then you hit 75, you can go into ASP. But this hasn't been very popular at all. A pensions provider, AJ Bell, actually did a Freedom of Information request last year. And in December, it said that fewer than 3,000 people across the whole country had even bothered to go into ASP. So it's not actually that popular. The reason for that is that there are very high tax charges on your pension fund if you die while in ASP of up to 82%. So I think people are thinking it's just not really worth the bother.
So not many benefits under the current system. When you get to age 75, however, if you've deferred taking your annuity until that point, presumably the annuity rates will be quite a lot better, and an annuity will not necessarily be a bad idea.
There is that, yeah. I mean, obviously, the older you are, the better the annuity rates, generally speaking. That's how the insurance companies work out what the rates are. So yes, if you're buying an annuity at age 75, you're going to get a much better rate than at age 70 or even age 74. The real reason that you would want to not buy an annuity at that age is likely to be that you want to pass on your pension money to your dependents, to your kids, your grandkids, whoever else. if you buy an annuity, you don't have that option. So this is going to apply to people who have an interest in leaving an inheritance with their pension fund, basically.
So again, it's going to appeal to wealthier people who've got more to leave and who resent the idea of an insurance company basically keeping all of it, or assuming that they don't sort of live so long that they get the better part of the deal, getting more income than their actual lump sum pension fund. Under the current rules, then, there's not such a great difference. Do you think this Tory proposal will win support? What's the reaction been in the market?
I think it will win support. I mean, it's actually not that new. We've known for a while that the Tories wanted to at least raise the age at which you had to buy an annuity to 80 or 85, and the Liberal Democrats are also supportive of that proposal. But pension people think that this is a good move because they think it will encourage more pension saving by people. They think if people know that their pension fund won't be taken off them at some point in the future and, you know, handed over to a life insurance company, if they can use it as part of their inheritance planning for kids, that will make them more likely to save into a pension at a time when a lot of people are worrying about the demise of pension saving, given all this scrapping of higher rate pension tax relief for higher earners. So they're hoping that it will actually appeal to this minority of people, but substantial interest in it anyway.
But will it be a vote winner? We will have to wait and see. Thanks very much for that, Alice. And for more on how a rule change could affect your pension planning, you can read Alice's article in FT Money with this weekend's FT and online at ft.com/money. Still to come on the show, with interest rates at an all-time low, are the tax savings offered by cash individual savings accounts or ISAs still worth having? First, though, venture capital trusts. Between now and the end of the tax year on the 5th of April, the amount of money invested into venture capital trusts is forecast to hit £250 million, an increase of 70% on last year. And the reason appears to be obvious. High earners with income of £150,000 or more can now invest only £20,000 to £30,000 into a pension with 40% tax relief. But they can still invest £200,000 into a VCT with 30% tax relief, a maximum tax saving of £60,000. But the investments that VCTs make can differ greatly, and the rules on how much risk they must take are about to change. So, Matthew, you study the VCT market on a daily basis. Isn't it the case that you need to be aware that venture capital trusts are very different to pensions?
They are a very different animal. I mean, they are used for retirement planning and they do pay out income for people in retirement. But whereas with pensions, they tend to be in sort of safer investments, VCTs are viewed as a much higher risk type of investment. There are positives on the VCT side, i.e. income from them is free of tax. And also there's no capital gains tax payable on money made within the fund. The limits are higher, but of course the holding period is much shorter than with a pension. You obviously have to hold that until retirement. And Alice touched upon, you know, about annuitisation later on when you're 75. But VCTs only have a five-year holding period. And I think this is key, but at Chelsea Financial Services, we view them as a complement to a pension rather than as an alternative. So it's not a natural progression. You fulfilled your pension allowance, then you immediately put money into a venture capital trust.
So it's not the case that you could just shift the money you were going to put into a pension into a VCT in spite of those attractive tax breaks. Let's talk about the risk attached to VCTs, because some are an awful lot riskier than others.
As an asset class, they are viewed as high risk. However, there are different risks within the VCT sector. There are such things as planned exit or limited life, which attempt to take as little risk as possible and wind up after the minimum holding period of five years. You've then got the generalists, who take a sort of medium risk, and then the specialists, where they will proceed to take the higher amount of risk for potential higher returns. But these will have usually sort of smaller, earlier stage companies which have, you know, a greater propensity to fail.
Now, these planned exit or limited life VCTs, there are quite a few of them around at the moment. And I think, as you were saying, they basically look to take as little risk as possible and generate almost all of their returns just from the effect of the tax relief. Because, you know, you invest £70 and it's worth £100. What sort of things do they actually put the money in?
There are varying different types of limited life. I would say that the ones that people are more familiar ones that invest in companies that have asset backing. So the VCT will have a charge over the assets of the company should it fail, i.e. be able to return something back to shareholders in the VCT should that company fail. And these would are likely to be portfolios of pubs, perhaps children's nurseries, garden centres, that sort of thing. Some are used within the entertainment industry, where there's a sort of high visibility of cash flow, and by that they can secure the assets on the company that they're lending the money to, as it were. So they are lending the money generally at a better rate than they would get from the bank, with a large incentive for that company to return the money after 5 years, which then fits in with the trust winding up.
One question I suppose that all investors need to address is whether or not investments like this will continue to get these sorts of tax breaks. We know of one change to the VCT rules that's coming up in April. That's to do with how much equity there needs to be compared with debt. Could you just explain what that rule change is?
Currently, at the moment, a VCT must have across the portfolio 30% in equity. And this, you know, what happens is that the VCT will try and take as little risk as possible in many respects because they want to generate returns for shareholders and not lose their money. What is currently been proposed, and it's come from a European Union state aid directive, that they say that funds that are raised after this tax year, so all funds raised this tax year are exempt and previous tax years, they will change it to 70% in equity.
But Matthew, I mean, what's always puzzled me about VCTs is, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, they haven't had a great track record, have they? So this is a fund with some fabulous tax breaks, but people still haven't made much money, if any, have they?
I would say there's a huge difference in performance. The difference is quite staggering at times. And I would say they've been in effect going since 1995, so some quite clear track records. Some have done appallingly badly, there's no getting away from that. A lot of that was during the technology boom, where companies had no real assets, they weren't profitable, and they were given money which they subsequently lost. But there are some quality managers who've been around for that period of time who have generated regular returns for investors.
So it's all a question of making sure you completely understand the risks and indeed the track records of the managers. Matthew, thank you very much indeed for that. And if you'd like to know more about those risks and the tax reliefs attached to VCTs, look out for the article in FT Money this weekend and online at ft.com/money. And finally today, ISAs. The conventional wisdom has it that if you are a taxpayer, you should always put the maximum amount into a cash ISA to earn interest on those savings tax-free. But the conventional wisdom always assumes that ISAs would pay more interest than 0.1% and would at least be competitive with ordinary taxed accounts. But Steve, looking at some of the ISA rates on the high streets right now, that doesn't appear to be the case anymore.
No, Matthew. I mean, there's a rogues gallery of big high street names that are paying just 0.1% on some of their, not all of them, but some of their ISA accounts. And analysts estimate possibly a million or more savers could be in these accounts.
So who are these rogues? Let's name them.
Yes, indeed. Let's name them. Halifax, Santander, Barclays. Even dare I say it, the bearded one, Virgin Money's cash ISA is only paying 0.1%.
So this is really making ISAs very poor value when you compare with ordinary taxed accounts, because you can earn far more than that on a conventional account. So why bother with the tax break?
You could, Matthew, but you could earn just as little from a taxed account, of course. There are plenty of tax savings accounts paying 0.1%. I mean, what people should really be doing, of course, with a 0.1% savings ISA account is looking for a better deal. And we're just coming into what's commonly termed the ISA season now, when banks and building societies will compete typically for people who haven't used up their allowances and people who want to use up their allowances in the new tax year. But anyone who's already got an existing ISA as well can take advantage of that competition to transfer their existing accounts to something new. And analysts are saying this year they expect rates to hit up to about 3.5% on the variable and the one-year fixed side, which will be where most of the money goes.
Which is much better value. Now, I've got a cash ISA with one of those rogues. Where should I be looking to transfer?
Well, analysts are saying they prefer one-year fixed rates because generally speaking, you're going to be offered a small premium to the variable rate. So you might get 3.5 against 3.25 on a variable rate side. Of course, that rate is by definition fixed for a year. But in the coming year, people aren't expecting savings rates, variable savings rates, to move up very much. Even if base rates move up, those increases may not be passed on to variable rate savers. And of course, if you go into a variable rate account, typically it may well have a bonus, an introductory bonus, which will fall off. So you'd have to be aware that your rate would become less competitive in the future. Or indeed, the Bank and Building Society might play the games that have resulted in these 0.1% rates and arbitrarily cut that ostensibly competitive rate once they've raised the cash.
Any particular good cash ISA rates that stand out to you?
Well, I agree with the analysts that 3.5 one-year fix is a pretty good return. I mean, listeners won't be necessarily impressed by these returns given what where savings rates have been traditionally. But don't forget, this is at a time when base rate is 0.5%, and it's tax-free. And while there has been a bit of a debate about the why bother with this tax-free savings account if it's not going to pay anything, the real point is that with expectations that taxes of all kinds are going to rise, well, this is another way of sheltering funds from tax in the future. So the real value comes through over the long term. And indeed, you'll recall we did some research a couple of months back which found that cash ISAs have actually outperformed their stock market equivalents over the past decade.
Exactly. So just very quickly, give me a couple of names that I should be looking
at. Well, it's difficult. This is the problem. We're right on the cusp of the season.
So I should wait.
I think wait, yes. Okay. Yes, that's what I should have said. You know, wait for now. There are good rates out there. The danger is, of course, though, you move now and you lock in something and tomorrow something better comes along. So I would put up the 0.1%. It's really just a few weeks and then maybe from the end of this month, early next month, you really should have a good picture of what competition is going to offer you.
Thanks, Steve. I shall remain poised with my ISA money and wait until the best rates come out. And you can get details of some of the current top-paying cash ISAs and the best taxable equivalents in Steve's article in FT Money this weekend. But that's all for this week's FT Money show. Remember, you can find weekday news updates on our website, ft.com/money. And you can read and comment on our latest blog posts at ft.com/money matters. We'll be back next week with another financial lowdown in downloadable form. But until then, it's goodbye from me, and it's goodbye from Steve, Alice, and Matthew Woodbridge of Chelsea Financial Services.
Goodbye.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has experienced teams who can craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex. Real wealth requires real solutions. Connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.